Hello, everyone, and welcome to VR Download. I'm Ian Hamilton, hosting from the United States, and joined by my colleague David Heaney in Northern Ireland. Each week on Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, we meet in this virtual reality studio using the latest technologies to talk about the next generation of personal computing. We can see your comments live during our recording on YouTube, and VR Download is syndicated out to all podcast platforms. Heaney, what do we have today?
Hi, everyone. It's great to be back in our normal studio. You may notice we actually have enhanced lighting now. We now have real-time dynamic lighting on the avatars, which hopefully should make them look a lot better for you and help you see the details and things like our hands. We also have hand tracking 2.0, so you'll probably notice our hand tracking is improved. So in terms of the actual topics, today we're going to talk about Valve's comment that Steam Deck's user interface is coming to virtual reality. We're going to be talking about trademark filings that indicate Apple's headset branding will be reality. We're going to talk about the revelation that Zuckerberg's Meta Avatars graphics update tease that we talked about last week was in fact concept tech art. And finally, we'll be talking about the fact that the launch month for Quest Pro, which you may know as its codename Project Cambria, has been revealed. So let's get straight into that first news topic about Steam Deck. Interface coming to VR, if you're ready.
Yeah, let's go for it. So Steam Deck, obviously the handheld computer PC, I'll call it a PC, but it's handheld from Valve, is going to have its user interface brought over to VR. Heaney, why don't you give us a recap of why this is significant?
Yeah, so Valve has been talking about having a significant user interface update to Steam VR for, I think, 2 years now. And it may even be more than just a user interface update. There may be kind of user experience updates. So Steam VR is obviously the software that the majority of people use to play PC VR content. If you're using your Quest via Link or virtual desktop, or if you're using a native headset like a HTC Vive or a Oculus Rift S. So it'll be really interesting to see how exactly this comes to VR. And the real question, if we want to just get address the elephant in the room here, is, does Valve by this mean simply Steam VR on PC, or is this yet another hint that the company plans to soon, or maybe not soon, launch a standalone headset that will use not just the interface of Steam Deck, but the operating system Steam OS?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that you brought it out there. You sort of talked about the different pieces they've got. And I think what's significant from my perspective about Valve here is they do have every layer of the stack that they could bring to bear in the future. So they've got Steam OS, they've got the Steam VR piece of the Steam store, and they could package this all up into a standalone system, or they could keep offering it piecemeal like they've had to do in the past. And when I wrote out this story, I went through and recapped this path. And basically, this news comes out of a PDF that Valve put out to celebrate Steam Deck launching in a couple countries. And that document recaps this path from basically them being a game maker company. That's all they did back in like the 90s, I think. They basically transformed in the early 2000s into the creator of Steam. And as soon as they did that, they became an entirely different organization, right? They've got this kind of cash cow system that just keeps delivering the money, because at the time, in the early 2000s, it was incredibly difficult to get updates for your multiplayer games. And Steam is the go-to place now over the last 20 years to go and get your content out to millions of gamers out there. But all of our viewers out there will know that Steam is also difficult when it comes to curation, right? You can get lost on Steam. But still, it is the go-to place, and we've got up-and-comers like Epic Games Store trying to get in there and unseat their throne. But while they took this store, you know, they built this store, they started to experiment in hardware in the early 2010s. And right about the time that Oculus and Facebook got into VR in a very big way, Valve was already into VR in a very big way. And their earliest days, they were very teamed up until Facebook kind of came into the picture and Oculus made it clear that it was focusing on a store. So that became a threat to Valve. And very quickly, Valve went out and teamed up with HTC and got the HTC Vive out to the market just a few months before Oculus was able to get there with a very similar feature set with hand tracking and room scale. And this, it's fascinating in my head to think of this evolution of these companies parallel to each other. Valve is a private company. They're in Bellevue, Washington, so they're privately organized, so you can't go to their quarterly earnings. There's basically no public relations presence at all for the company. When they're ready to announce something, they announce it. And so we basically have one mention of, or two mentions of virtual reality in this PDF that Valve put out. And that single mention alludes to this idea that they're going to take the work that they've done for the Steam Deck and bring it over to VR. And it makes perfect sense because the Steam VR interface has lagged a lot of what else is out there, right, Heaney?
Yeah, and so this idea that Valve's going to take the concepts that they've used with the Steam Deck and bring it to VR isn't new. Valve has talked in the past when asked by interviewers, they've said that what they've done with that mobile processor, that laptop-style processor, is very relevant to their future plans for virtual reality. We've seen a lot of evidence leak and been found by data miners such as Brad Lynch, sadly as Bradley, showing that Valve is working on a headset codenamed Deckard that seems to be getting further and further along in its progression. So it will be really fascinating to see how does this come together as a product and what sort of place would it start to take in the market? I think it's very interesting to note, by the way, just on your kind of history of Steam, when you were talking about the early 2000s, that Steam was actually very poorly received at first. PC gamers hated the idea of having to use a separate piece of software to and have to make an account to play games such as Half-Life 2. They really, you know, a lot of people at the time said, oh, I didn't need an account for Half-Life. Why do I need one for Half-Life 2? So it's fascinating to see, from my perspective, how these kind of trends in what a core audience detests can change over time to be such a reversal to today, where Steam is, you know, almost universally a loved product.
Yeah, it's interesting to talk about it, a loved product, because it's a hated product too, right? There are still people, there's plenty of people out there that can't stand Steam. And even its approach to curation or lack thereof is both loved and hated as well. So you can get your stuff on Steam pretty easily on the grand scheme of things, but then also making it stand out is incredibly difficult. And so it's constantly in this love-hate relationship with a lot of people. But the other piece of this that I think is interesting is, I think it's Proton. Is that the name of their software layer for translation of graphical services on Linux? Is that right, Heaney?
Yeah, for bringing Windows apps to Linux.
Yeah, so they've got this work, basically, so that people who have a lot of games that run on Windows could ditch Windows if they wanted and still get their games on a Linux OS. And Steam OS is based on Linux. And you've got these dueling approaches here where Valve has done a lot of work to get this operating system up and running, to let gamers be untethered from their dependencies on other pieces of software. And that's running parallel to all this work that Meta and Facebook were doing to get the Android operating system up and running for VR. And so there's all these devs putting all their work into the Android APKs, getting those out to a lot of people via standalone systems. And then there's all these people that are putting their games out on Valve's Steam. But we've heard it and we've seen it in our developers and our audience that we talk to, that, you know, people think or see Steam as lagging, that the new content has stopped flowing in the same quantities or at the same production values that it did a few years ago because of the number of standalone VR headsets that have gotten out to the market. It's drawing a lot of attention to standalone. Do you think we will see Valve confirm anything more on its standalone efforts before they're ready to announce a product?
Well, some people take the view that the findings that people find in the Steam VR files and firmware files for things like the Lighthouse that indicate this headset called Deckard coming are intentionally put there by Valve. And this has been a kind of long-term theory of people who are investigating Valve's actions, that they, rather than teasing things publicly, they leave little clues in the files so that the hype for these products builds up over time without them having to kind of be beholden to their own public statements. But I would note that if Deckard does come along and it is a standalone headset, even if it's using a PC-style processor like in Steam Deck, it's probably the content it runs will probably be a lot more similar to what you find in a Quest than what you find on a 500-watt $2,000 PC, simply because of the fact that it has to be in a portable form factor and run on a battery. So yes, they will have the advantage of being a PC operating system if they use SteamOS. So you can bring across Linux apps, you can use Proton to bring across Windows apps. But from an actual performance perspective, developers would probably still be doing a lot of the same work that they're doing when they're porting to standalone systems like Quest and Pico.
Any comments out there that we want to respond to? And I think my list of topics is a little mixed up, so you're going to have to remind me what we've got next up.
Next up, we're going to be talking about the Apple filings. There was just a few comments I was going to address on our avatars people are asking. I think, standby, I'm not able to actually scroll through on my tablet here. Alyssa was asking, it would be cool to be able to sit inside our studio while we do the weekly update. That is something we are working on and plan, so stay tuned for that. Artful asks if our avatars had teeth beforehand because they seem quite pronounced. The answer is yes, but we weren't doing real-time lighting, so you wouldn't be able to kind of see the details in the avatar.
Everyone's noticing your nose. Did your nose change from the... Like, did you do anything to that avatar prior to... It's just the same nose with different lighting?
No, it's this. I haven't edited my avatar at all, so either Meta has updated this nose server-side to look different than it did before. Maybe they've updated all the avatar noses, and that's something that they kind of can load in dynamically without apps needing to update. But I don't know. It may just be the lighting.
And OpenXR, I just want to add the OpenXR comments. Valve is a very big supporter of OpenXR. They were one of the earliest supporters, along with, basically, it's an industry-wide effort. But Valve did sort of alert devs that they should start supporting OpenXR going forward. And Facebook was out there early in deprecating the Oculus API in favor of OpenXR. But Valve is there too as well, right, Heaney?
Yeah, so OpenXR, it makes it generally easier to port between all these systems so that there's going to be much less platform-specific code for future VR developers to have to worry about. But at the same time, if you built an app for Android standalone systems, there's going to be a decent amount of work in making that then suitable for PC-based systems. But generally, if you're using an engine like Unity or Unreal, that's a lot less work than it used to be, but it's still non-trivial if you're doing anything low-level or interacting with the operating systems, media APIs or anything like that. But in general, I think OpenXR continues a positive trend in the industry that back in the days of 2016 when the Oculus Rift and the original Vive were out, it was a lot more work to make apps that worked well on both platforms than it is today.
Let's talk about these trademarks now, the Apple Reality trademark and that terminology. Heaney, why don't you walk us through what we actually know for sure about these trademarks, and then we're going to have a pretty lively discussion about kind of the direction here and what it means.
Yeah, so Apple in the past has been known to use shell companies to file trademarks in advance of products that haven't been announced yet. It's something they're on record of doing for macOS yearly updates. And it's something that they actually did in May, and we talked about on this show, when a shell company linked to Apple filed for the trademark Reality OS. And if you've been following our show or our coverage, you'll know that Reality OS was first reported by Bloomberg all the way back in 2017 as being the name of the operating system Apple is working on for its headset. And back earlier this year, at the start of this year, that Reality OS was found in Apple App Store upload logs, and it was also found in an Apple GitHub repository. So we have, you know, direct references to this operating system as being a thing in Apple's own code. So fast forward to this week, and we have a new report from Bloomberg noticing that another shell company with links to Apple has trademarked these three phrases: Reality One, Reality Pro, and Reality Processor. So this is heavily indicating that the Apple's brand for its headset will be Reality. Now, it's interesting that we see Reality One and Reality Pro. These seem to be two contenders for the product name. And what we've heard so far from the reports from the likes of Bloomberg, The Information, and Ming-Chi Kuo about this headset is that it will be a very premium product priced north of $2,000. So what I wonder here is, will Apple use the Pro branding for its first product and then in future products use a standardized kind of Rally 1 in the same way that the first product would then kind of be akin to the MacBook Pro line, and then in future they would release more affordable versions that would maybe not have that Pro naming?
That's a really interesting way of looking at it. The thing that stood out to me is if you put the word Apple in front of any of these, you get Apple reality, you get AR. And right from the top down, you have a branding to kind of match Meta's effort to, as a company-wide effort, brand everything around their effort to reach people with headsets in the future. But I think it's pretty powerful to think about the idea that they could have an AR1 system here in the near future. But you bring up a great point that we have every expectation that this first headset out of Apple is going to be very expensive and could potentially be priced out of reasonability for average consumers, right? You're not talking about in the hundreds of dollars, you're potentially talking in the thousands, right? Desitronic. I just want to reply to Desitronic's comment here because it's cracking me up. Desitronic is saying that Heaney's avatar now looks like David Lynch now. I can't unsee it. And that is absolutely true. You've got David Lynch's hair, and I'm waiting for you to tell us that it's Friday once again.
So, on that pricing, I think we have three separate sources now. You have The Information, Bloomberg, and I believe the New York Times, though they may have been referencing Bloomberg, saying that this will be north of $2,000. So there's pretty much no chance this thing is going to come in at a couple of hundred dollars. A commenter here asking whether we think this will be used for gaming. The Information had a report a couple of months ago that talked about the kind of entire protracted development process of this headset. And they noted that one of the complaints from some of the former employees that worked on this project was that there was a lack of focus on gaming and that none of the pitches to the executives included gaming. We've also heard in these reports that there will not be touch-like gaming controllers. This will not have, you know, controllers with buttons and thumbsticks and that kind of traditional VR input we've seen so far. The only thing we've heard about the input of this device from these reports, and again, this is all just from what these outlets are reporting, is that it will have some sort of thimble-like device that attaches to your finger. It looks like, based on what we know so far and based on intuition, that Apple's focus for this headset will be on media viewing, so immersive media, putting you in a virtual, enormous cinema screen to watch your Apple TV content. Viewing immersive 360-degree content, viewing real-time rendered scenes, viewing sports in a headset, as well as productivity functionality, such as being able to view your MacBook's monitors in VR. So you can have you can carry around one MacBook with you portably and this headset, and yet have, you know, as many monitors surrounding you as you want, which is a big focus of Quest Pro that Zuckerberg's talked about that we'll talk about later. So it doesn't look like gaming is going to be the focus, but I'm sure that there will be traditional casual games that developers can build within this input limitation. Just because you don't have hardcore games that you move around a large immersive environment with a thumbstick and buttons, that doesn't mean that games can't exist at all on a platform like this.
Yeah, input is the ultimate question. We've talked about that a lot week in and week out, where we really don't know what kind of input approach Apple is going to take to its device and what that fundamental scheme is going to be. There's, of course, the lack of haptic feedback on your fingers is a huge problem for a lot of people. And you can only get so much from clicking your fingers together, right? You get a little haptic effect when you do that, but it's not the same as something pushing back against your finger in the same way you might on a touchscreen. And there was a comment here I wanted to respond to. If you have questions, leave them in our comments, and hopefully our other readers will respond to them, our other viewers will respond to them. We've got a very helpful community, and we want to be very welcoming to all the people out there that are learning about VR and AR for the first time, and so they might be able to answer questions if we're not able to. One of the questions was which headsets we're using, and I saw they got an answer there, but we're using Quest 2. And that means we've got no actual face tracking on these headsets at this time. Heaney has hooked up to basically really incredible work Heaney's done here to sync up our mouth movements and our sounds to the shapes of our mouths. And then basically he's inferring a lot to get our eye contact to move in the right direction. But we have every expectation that these avatars and later avatars, once we can hopefully add the Ready Player Me system, will look much more compelling once we've actually got real face tracking in a standalone headset. But right now we're running on Quest 2s. They're the lightest, most capable system that we've got right now, but we hope to have a lot more supported in the coming months and years, right, Heaney?
Yeah, Karam here keeps kind of commenting over and over, so please don't spam the same comment over and over, that Bloomberg's last report mentioned that Apple's headset will support games. And like I just said, if you don't have... Gaming is not just hardcore games. If you look around the world at how technology is used for gaming, the vast majority of gaming is what core gamers would call casual games. It's the kind of games people play on their iPad, on their smartphone, you know, in many cases on something like a Nintendo Switch, or even on a laptop in a web browser, or on, you know, games that don't require a powerful 3D graphics card at all. That's gaming for most people in the world does not mean navigating around a AAA immersive environment with a thumbstick. So if you don't have that thumbstick, you can still have games, but it's probably not going to be the same kind of games that are selling PC VR headsets or even Quest 2s today if it doesn't have an input system that's designed around that. But the mixed reality focus of this headset, one of the things that's being reported over and over again is that this thing will have high resolution color cameras for advanced mixed reality that can make your room the setting of content, means that you'll likely have games that exist within your own play space that you won't want to or need to move around a thumbstick in those games, because, you know, your couch will become a sandbag that you crouch behind and can shoot over or something like that. Or the enemies will come flying in your windows or smash through holes in your walls or, you know, break down a virtual door that's placed where your door is. Mixed reality opens up all of these ideas without even having to have a way to locomote around the environment.
I think I don't want to derail us too much, but I think about the terminology wars, right? Every terminology, every kind of R is out there. XR, MR, AR, VR, any consonant you can put in front of a, you know, any vowel, any letter you can put in front of R has been put in front of R. And we run uploadvr.com. Our channel is UploadVR. And we know that Apple has been aiming for this big moment when augmented reality is going to be big. So Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, has repeatedly on the record referred to the potential of AR and augmented reality. And we know Mark Zuckerberg and Meta are aiming for augmented reality long term. They want to get to the glasses form factor for AR over the long term. And then, of course, we've got HoloLens system over at Microsoft. You know, there is a collective assumption that long term, glasses you wear out into the real world most of the day are the end all be all goal of personal computing, so to speak. Maybe we get to contact lenses sometime after that, but for the next few decades, there's a target of all-day wearable AR glasses. But we've referred to this again and again on our show, where you can't have a system that completely blocks out the outside world, which is what a VR headset does functionally. That's how the optics work. Blocks out the outside world, simulates a new world inside of your display, and then maybe pipes in a camera feed from the outside to layer in the physical world back on it. Well, that's an incredibly powerful system for indoor use, and everything we've seen is indicating a very good path there over the next 10 years to do VR more and more impressively indoors. But with this layer in between, this display layer, you don't have transparent optics on these systems. And, you know, I hate to boil down this to just marketing terminology when at the end of the day, it's going to be what these devices do for the end user that determines who the winner and the loser is. But we did just see Facebook completely rebrand itself from the top down to ready itself for this upcoming push. And I just think, are we going to have a lot of ugly wars in the next year over the terminology again? Is it going to get even worse, Heaney, some of this battling over terminology?
Yeah, it's clear that Apple is going with augmented reality when it comes to content that is positioned in your real environment. You know, there's literally a page on Apple's website just called Augmented Reality that talks about its use cases for the iPhone and iPad. When Tim Cook was interviewed by that Chinese outlet a few months ago that we talked about, he was hinting at the headset, you know, vaguely hinting at it while talking about the topic of augmented reality. And so the question I think that some of the commenters have brought up here is, how is Apple going to refer to VR? Because I don't think it's something that we've heard, unless I'm wrong, I don't think it's actually something we've heard Apple refer to in the context of any of its products. And some people are suggesting here that Apple might call it simulated reality to try and go for its own kind of branding. And that's something that I could really see happening. Apple may want to distance itself from Meta and try and do what it always does and come up with its own terminology, as you mentioned. And simulated reality could be a context. But at the end of the day, the terminology really doesn't matter. What matters is what these devices can do for people. And as we've talked about before in this show, yes, those outdoor glasses that you can wear down the street are the end goal. But before then, and even while those glasses are a thing, there's going to be this separate class of device that you wear in your house. And it's headsets and glasses will be these two kind of distinct product lines that perhaps run similar software when it comes to the augmented reality content, and perhaps have a lot of the same general architecture from, you know, being a wearable device that has a processor on your face, but as you mentioned, have very, very different optical systems where when you don't have to have the device be see-through, you can provide a much wider field of view at a lower cost and don't have the issues of making objects seem fully opaque. And you can kind of transform your environment much more than you can with an AR headset. Some people are saying here, for example, that, you know, they don't want their room to be the scene of a game because it's not particularly interesting, but it wouldn't really be your room. It would just be the geometry of your room. If you have a mixed reality headset like this with cameras, and if the software and the processor is advanced enough, it can reskin your entire room and add details that aren't really there so that it's only the shape and size of your room. Everything else looks completely different.
Seeing some great comments out there. Thank you, Alyssa, for encouraging people to hit the like button. Yes, please like, share our show out. We do try to be a place that is accepting of all new voices, and we want to make sure that we're able to help out anybody out there that we can. The comment from Chris Richardson, is Upload considering changing over to using Pico headsets for the show? That would be a true measure of how likely new headsets are to make a mark, and you would report on your own use case. What do you think of that, Heaney?
So right now, Pico isn't available for consumers in the United States. It's only really the Pico Neo 3 Link is only a beta project in Europe. If the reports about Pico 4 are accurate and it is going to be a wide consumer launch that ByteDance is serious about and it's available in the United States, we will definitely prioritize making sure to support that headset. And, you know, whether we use it will probably just be based on what headset I have charged at the moment when we come in. You know, if we were using one headset and then we have the other, I doubt we'll have a particular preference unless there is a significant hardware difference. If the reports of Pico 4 being slimmer and lighter are true, and if it happens to have hand tracking, I'll probably use it over Quest 2. But then the question is, which would I choose to use personally over Quest Pro versus Pico 4? Who knows? It really just depends on how those devices end up being, which one's more comfortable for my personal head shape. And if we support both devices, then I guess each staff member and each interviewee we have in the studio can just make their own decision on that. You are muted.
Okay, sorry. Heaney's got a little button here on my tablet, and I have to push my finger through it. I want a better button there, Heaney. I'm sorry. So what was that video you were showing up there, Heaney?
Yeah, so I was just coming back to what we were talking about before, where it's demonstrating how a system with the advanced enough sensors and processors can take your current room's geometry and reskin it to be an interesting environment for a game. And it's something I expect that Apple's headset will focus heavily on, and it's something that I also expect that Quest Pro will focus on if it gets future updates that let it automatically mesh your room. Because right now on Quest 2, as we've talked about before, you can manually mark out your furniture, but that's quite a time-consuming process, and it's not something that developers are going to want to build around until it's truly automatic.
Yeah, and there are some features in the Apple iOS system already for room mapping, right? There's some significant features there for recognition of objects in your room, even humans. One of my first real life use cases of augmented reality is to use the Measure app on iOS, and they have built-in human detection to basically measure the height of people, and it's become a go-to way to check on the height of my kids, family members, and it's like, oh wow, you've grown so much. And you just pull out the phone and immediately know exactly how tall they are since the last time you saw them. And like, it's that's the way AR is slowly integrating itself into our lives. Amazon has the ability and has had the ability for years now to put an object into your room and see how it sizes with your world. But the thing we come back to again and again, Heaney, is what is the advantage of the Apple system versus other systems? And they're going to have a integrated system from the top down that's going to take a couple of years for Meta and others to potentially catch up to. So there are potentially a lot of benefits from having other devices in the Apple ecosystem with the Apple headset. It could be next level. I will mention that Apple has an event coming up on September 7th. They called it Far Out. That's the verbiage there. There's been discussion again and again at every single Apple event. Is this going to be the event that they're going to actually show off the device? I don't have an invite. We don't have an invite to the event. And even getting that invite from Apple, if they recognize us as a voice that we should be at that event, like that would be news. That would be the confirmation. So I don't even know if they could actually invite us to an event without giving something away that they're actually going to launch something. So we have no idea if September 7th is the time they finally do it. But we've been thinking about whether we're going to get there again and again, and I hate to get people's hopes up.
Yeah, the last thing we heard from a reliable source is Ming-Chi Kuo, that supply chain analyst that is also often quoted for specs about this headset. He's the one who originally said they would have a MacBook-level processor. He's the one who originally said they will have dual 4K micro displays. He has said that the device will be unveiled in January and then ship by the summer. So it's not something we expect to happen as early as September. By all accounts, this device is not coming out this year. It is something that's going to happen next year. If those accounts could be wrong. When it comes to what's going to be different about the Apple headset, I think the real core is this third line in the filed trademarks this week, and it's reality processor. Because what we heard, as I said, from Ming-Chi Kuo, is that it will have a MacBook level processor. And the information report recently went on to more detail to say that this processor would be based on the M2 chip that is seen in the latest MacBooks. And if that's true, what we have on our hands will be a headset that is much more powerful than a Quest 2. And though we don't know the specs of Quest Pro, based on the fact that Meta has to work with Qualcomm, it does not have its own processors, it will likely be much more powerful than Quest Pro. And that's Apple's real advantage, that it has spent the better part of a decade building up this silicon division within the company that has allowed it to ship the world's most powerful phones, the world's relative to their performance, highest battery life laptops, and now potentially a standalone headset that bridges the gap between standalone and PC. And so yes, you have this ecosystem of software, but from a pure hardware perspective, though it will be expensive based on the reports so far, this thing will be a lot more powerful than the current mobile headsets we have today. You are muted.
The only other curveball I would throw out there via timing is this is going to be such a big development platform, a whole new paradigm. And that paradigm also extends to iPads and iPhones and to a lesser extent, Apple's other devices. But you do have these existing device categories in iOS that Apple is going to want to use in some capacity. And they've already been building these features into those devices. I think there's a reason for them to very early signal to developers, hey, this platform is real, and here's how you can play around with it now. And that would be the only reason to get out there this early in front of announcing that device, is to say, hey, this developer platform is real and it's going to be big, and here's how you can toy around with it.
Oh, I'd imagine that Apple has probably already sent some of these headsets out to a core group of developers. There's, you know, you can't launch a product like this with no content there. But
I have to disagree with that. Like this is they invite developers to Apple headquarters when it's time to develop for a new platform, and they don't want a repeat of the, you know, an iPhone ending up in a bar for this. Like, you know, I think they probably keep it behind closed doors still, but
for the iPad, you know, it launched with content the developers were given. Then again, obviously that was sort of just a variant of iOS. It just seems, how do you launch a system like this in reportedly less than a year without giving developers access to the hardware?
Let's talk about the next subject. I think we've talked about Apple, and we're going to keep talking about Apple week in and week out. But what do we got next, Heaney?
Yeah, so next we're going to talk about the revelation that Zuckerberg's Meta Avatars graphics update tease was in fact concept tech art and not a real screenshot of an upcoming update. So don't worry, I have the image here to bring up. And the context of this, I don't know why the image isn't showing, but the context of this was that Mark Zuckerberg obviously posted the screenshot from Horizon Worlds of his Meta Avatar, and it was not received well. It received widespread mockery. And then a few days later, he posted a teaser showing new graphics updates coming to Horizon Worlds and coming to Meta Avatars. And by all accounts, that Horizon Worlds one seems to have been a real in-engine screenshot, but the Meta Avatars screenshot was a custom-made avatar for Zuckerberg that reportedly took a little under 4 weeks and 40 iterations, and it was sculpted, modeled, lit, and textured specifically to be Zuckerberg.
Yeah, so this has been an ongoing development. We try to decide what our audience needs to know about, so we sort of pick what articles are worth writing about. And almost every update that Mark Zuckerberg puts out about VR or the metaverse gets blown up by some news outlets out there. And this one was one we decided to pass on. We decided not to like sort of blow it out of proportion when the first one went out. But I had never seen quite a reaction of the scale that we saw for that first Horizon avatar, right? That just visceral reactions of hatred for these. They called it the meme that sort of stuck in my head was talking about the Jaws guy saying that the avatar had cold, dead eyes, just like a shark. And then we saw this second image come out, right? And some more news covered this updated avatar, and we picked up and decided to cover this image once it hit the internet and showed this other view of Zuckerberg. But the thing here, Heaney, is I'm seeing it in our comments. These avatars are ever so slightly creepy, right? There's only so much that we can do with this current technology. But our viewers out there understand, you know, our repeat viewers understand exactly what they're looking at here. And new viewers have to decide, is this too creepy for me, or can I handle this? And I don't blame them. But we have every expectation that over time, the technology is going to get better, the avatars are going to get better, and we will eventually have, maybe it's a decade out, Heaney, a situation where you and I are going to go face-to-face and feel like we're in the same room, to the extent that a facial expression I saw you make 3 weeks ago when I met you for the first time in the real world, right? I met Heaney for the first time in the real world, and sometime in the future, he's going to make an expression that I'm going to recognize from that meeting face to face. And I will feel as if we are face to face, one to one, exactly like it was when we met in the physical world. It's just going to take a lot of development and a lot of progress on a lot of axes to get there. But even go watch our show from 2 weeks ago and compare it to now, and there are significant improvements to what you're seeing. And if you go watch, I can't watch the shows that we did a year ago, Heaney. I had to go do a VR chat. I did a VR chat tour, and I went and looked at the Rift Home avatars, And I never felt more comfortable looking at myself in an avatar before, because they still have those really grotesque avatars from a couple years ago. Like, I want to forget that those avatars ever existed, and it's going to be like that for even these avatars. We're going to move forward, and it's going to be hard for us to look back at these avatars. But the thing about this image, Heaney, is how likely is it that we're going to be using avatars like this before year's end?
So before year's end, I think, is unlikely by any case, if this is something that is still concept tech art. So the distinction we're making between concept art and concept tech art is that the LinkedIn post that revealed what we're talking about, that this is not in fact a real screenshot of the upcoming avatars update, did reveal that it is running in real time. It didn't say what hardware it's running on in real time. It could be a PC, but presumably that means it's running in real time on either a Quest 2 or a Quest Pro. The thing about avatar design, VR avatar design, that a lot of people don't really appreciate until they see it done badly, is that you may, if you've never thought about this, just think, why don't they just have a photorealistic avatar? We all play video games where there are very, very realistic characters that are animated. You know, they talk to us, they're in all sorts of kind of campaign single player games. You have these highly realistic human beings. The problem is that those are driven by facial capture rigs that cost something like $20,000 or $50,000, where the actor has this entire motion capture suit on, they have this giant rig attached to their face, and then an animator has to go in and spend hours and hours to correct the tracking on that facial capture rig to get the final result you see. VR avatars have to be driven in real time by the sensors that the headsets have. And consumer headsets today have no form of face tracking. My mouth is that you see on my avatar right now is just a machine learning model taking the microphone input and trying to decide what does the mouth probably look like. My eyes are moving because I, as a developer, have assigned each object in this room a gaze priority, and another machine learning model is trying to decide which object is it that I'm most likely looking at. Quest Pro, and by the reports, Pico 4 Pro, will bring face and eye tracking to consumer standalone headsets this year, if those reports about Pico are true. So we will then be able to get a, you know, a higher fidelity tracking input. The problem is, if you take a realistic graphical avatar and try to drive it with a headset that has no form of face and eye tracking, it will just look like a creepy, lifeless mannequin. Even creepier than this, it's creepier to look realistic without moving realistically than it is to have a cartoon that doesn't have enough details in the face to show the lack of face tracking. The reason that VR avatar design systems go for a simplistic look is because the tracking input is simplistic. Over time, as the hardware gives you more, higher and higher fidelity face tracking and eye tracking, the VR avatar systems will get higher fidelity graphics. And eventually, as Ian suggests, the goal from companies like Meta, and we would assume Apple and Microsoft, is that the avatars are indistinguishable from reality, driven by sensors that can pick up even the most minute of facial expressions. So what I wonder about this style, if it does come to fruition, is even if it looks good when driven by Quest Pro's face and eye tracking sensors, will it really look good on Quest 2, or will it not? And the last thing I'd say about VR avatars, as any repeat viewers will have heard me say dozens of times, is that you should never, ever judge a VR avatar system by a screenshot, because the point isn't to make something look good in an image. It's to make it look good when driven in real time by the head and hand tracking sensors, as we are doing right now.
All right, I think we've gone super meta. I think we're creeping out our audience a little too much here with all these avatar systems. And I think we need to move on to get this out of people's heads a little bit. I appreciate Xavier's comment out there that, yeah, they saw the old avatars and closed that down. And again, please hit the like button so that more people get in here and follow this path with us over the long term as we kind of improve all this as quickly as we can. But we're doing the best we can with the very latest, right?
Zuckerberg is creepy in real life. I think people are probably just creeped out by Mark Zuckerberg. All right, well, he picked someone else. Boom, he's gone.
Joe Rogan, the Joe Rogan podcast, he appeared on that podcast. It is a 3-hour discussion, and I listened to about 2 hours of it. The first half hour, 45 minutes are about VR specifically. But it was very interesting to see him, you know, he apparently gave Joe Rogan a Quest Pro demo right before doing that interview and played some games with him, because in that Joe Rogan podcast, they talked about face and eye tracking in it. But, you know, Zuckerberg talked about, what is it, thinking that Rogan tries to represent a variety of voices with his podcast. And that's kind of, it kind of hinted to me why Zuckerberg chose to go on that podcast. But if you do want sort of insight into that person's strategy, the way he's thinking, that is a useful podcast to go and listen to really understand where Zuckerberg is coming from. And yeah, I don't, he's obviously got some, a lot of these people who are building VR and AR and all these technologies, right? It's hard for them to come across as working at the same level as the general public. And being able to see Zuckerberg for that length of time talking with Rogan was something that they really haven't done before. Both Lex Fridman and Rogan give people the air to talk at length in extended ways. And it's one of the only ways you can get a real sense of where a person is coming from is when they're talking at length. And it's one of the things we even try to do on our show, our podcast, our YouTube channel. We're trying not to take people out of context, right? It's you got to get them in context, and you've got to give them the time to speak and get their point across. And we've just spent the last 20 years on the internet where we're reducing things to sound bites and 140 characters. And, you know, we're seeing the internet and a lot of these platforms try to push past that. And I don't know, like TikTok is, I can't stand TikTok because it feels like the utter, just remove all the context possible and go for those sound bites in the most extreme way. Even though I know there's some people doing some great stuff on TikTok, it feels like the kind of absolute end of all the platforms that we saw, kind of like a minimum bar for just getting as many creators in as possible, as many viewers in as possible, and tuning everything strictly for engagement rather than actually representing context. But, you know, I hope that over the years to come, people will start looking for that context and really listening at length. And I know that's a hard thing to expect.
Yeah, it's fascinating that in recent years we've seen this explosion of both these kind of content. Simultaneously, you see TikTok, which is, you know, I think the average video viewing length is something like 6 seconds, is exploding in popularity. But so is long form podcasts of the type of Lex Fridman and Joe Rogan. And that's where, as you say, we've got to hear Mark Zuckerberg's vision for the future of his company and how he looks at the world for both good and bad perspectives. Much more than if it's just a standard interview, because as you say, a standard interviewer is with Zuckerberg for maybe 5 or 10 minutes. They're trying to get a soundbite out of him to clip out for 5 seconds to make the headline of their article, to get the juiciest clickbait and put a screenshot of him with a sad or angry face at the front of it and hope that's going to, you know, get to the top of their website for the day. Whereas in this, you really get the interviewer to sit and actually hear what he has to say and use questions that will get you to actually hear his philosophy rather than having him constantly just be on the defensive and have to parrot PR lines. Or the other content you see when you're hearing about Mark Zuckerberg's views on these things is something clipped out of a 6-hour Senate hearing that obviously anyone's going to say something stupid in 6 hours of being grilled by a bunch of politicians. So it was a fascinating insight into Zuckerberg's current views on VR and where he sees it going, just like Lex Fridman's was. And I really recommend anyone in this audience, if you're remotely interested in VR, you should definitely go and listen to the full 3 hours. But the revelation that we're talking about today, the headline that we got out of it, is that Zuckerberg told Rogan that Meta's next device launches in October. And this was while Joe Rogan had just talked about trying this new device, which he hilariously called the new Oculus after Meta has killed the Oculus brand. And he described a device with face and eye tracking. And, you know, he said, when I move my mouth, she moved her mouth. When I move my eyes left and right, it's tracking my eyes. When I make an angry face, it makes an angry face. And this has been a key feature that Mark Zuckerberg has repeatedly talked about that he wants in these future headsets from Meta. And he's even said in his Lex Fridman interview a few months ago that he would prioritize having these sensors over making the thinnest and lightest headset possible, which is something that it doesn't look like Pico is going to do.
Hey, Bradley, thank you for tuning in. And thank you to everyone. Again, like, comment, subscribe, share this out, get more people in here. The October timeline, people are talking about Connect. We had confirmation over the weekend that John Carmack, the chief technical officer of Oculus back in the day, now just a consultant for Meta and Facebook who works one day a week, he's going to have an unscripted talk inside VR. And I have become, I became obsessed with one of these comments that Carmack made at the Connect event last year, where he talked about how trying to directly create a metaverse or the metaverse is not the best way to make the metaverse. He was basically said that Meta risked potentially losing thousands of jobs or wasting thousands of jobs and billions of dollars specifically trying to build this concept and doing it so explicitly. Carmack has been this big proponent of mobile VR since the beginning. He was basically suggesting back in 2012, you can go and find the video, where he's talking about this concept of putting computer vision-based sensors on the device and eventually getting to where we have today, this exact Quest device. And almost as soon as the he clearly, Meta and Facebook clearly got the right package, he was like, okay, I think I'm ready to move on here. And he started focusing on artificial general intelligence. But this unscripted talk, if you've never seen it, he just talks nonstop for an hour and 15 minutes or something straight into the camera on everything on his mind. And the guy has enough money that it doesn't, he's just going to say whatever he wants and no matter what. And I almost think that that is useful to Mark Zuckerberg and the other people at the very highest tiers of that organization, because, you know, they have a lot of, I assume they have a lot of yes people, people who are scared to lose their jobs. And so it can be an echo chamber inside that organization when nobody is going to push back. And if you want someone to push back, Carmack is the person to do it. So it's really cool that he says, number one, he's going to have his unscripted talk in VR. And number two, it's going to be in VR. So this could be the first time we actually get to see what it looks like for Carmack in virtual world. So at every Oculus Connect I've ever been to, Carmack stands in a hallway and in a group of people form around him as they just listen to him do the same thing he does in that unscripted talk, where he just talks for hours and answers every question that's pelted at him. And it's fascinating to see. And I'll be curious to see how that dynamic works in VR, because last year he did his talk outside of VR and then he went inside of VR for some question and answer, but you had to be like hand selected to enter the room with him, I think. And I couldn't find a way to get into the room with him. And I'm going to be chasing him after this year's Connect. Heaney, the only thing is we don't know specifically yet when the Connect event is. I think that's another reason why I think it's interesting to think about Apple and all the other things we have lining up at the end of this year and into early next year. There is a lot of gamesmanship to be had in timing your release schedule and building the hype. And it's why I think that we could be in for some, more than normal, we could be in for some surprises from Apple and other companies, just because we know that not only is Meta going to announce and launch its next headset, but they've got to give a software roadmap beyond that. And there's every reason for these competing platforms to try to get there too.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing about Carmack is it's not only that he has FU money, you know, that he doesn't need that job. He does it by choice. It's also the fact that he is the longest standing Oculus employee that I'm aware of. I don't think there's anyone else still at Meta that has been around for the entire journey. Like Carmack, not on the product team especially. Maybe there's some on the research teams, but no one that's been there and in the trenches in mobile VR. As you say, when most people thought that mobile VR was a fad or a gimmick or some sort of kind of just an off-road to get people interested in VR for them to jump into real PC VR, Carmack, as you say, described back in 2012 a headset that ran on a mobile chip running Android with sent with cameras for inside-out tracking. And as some of the commenters have said here, he was wrong about input. He thought it was going to be a gamepad as the input. It turned out that, you know, HTC and Valve were right about the input people wanted. It was those two tracked controllers in a room-scale space. But he can give that unique technical perspective that, as you say, no one else would be able to give Zuckerberg. Unfortunately, we can't scroll up in the comments today, so we can only really see the most recent comments. So we'll have to try and lift the headset up to read the comments that just came before.
What's our next subject we got coming up, Heaney?
This is the last subject.
Okay. Well, I wanted to recap for people why we know or why we think it's called Quest Pro. So multiple executives at Facebook have referred to the term Quest Pro in the past. I think infamously, like Andrew Bosworth, the head of basically the VR efforts initially, and then now CTO of the whole company, answered a question saying, calling it Quest Pro in the answer, basically, a while back. And right now, that headset, all it's known is Project Cambria. That's the official term. But then we also found some references in code. There have been references in code to the Quest Pro name quite recently, right?
Yeah. So in July, a data miner discovered Quest Pro in the Oculus iOS app. So a new update to that app that you're required to use to set up Quest and Quest 2 references Quest Pro. So given the fact that Zuckerberg used it in a CNN interview a year ago, given the fact that it's in this new iOS update, we are highly, highly confident that Project Cambria's product name is Quest Pro. To reply to Shafu's comment here, are they ignoring Lynx for another week in a row? We're not ignoring Lynx. We're very excited for it. It's just Lynx is experiencing what a lot of small hardware startups are experiencing right now, which is supply chain related delays because of the production issues in China. And, you know, it was originally supposed to launch around May, June, July, and now it's expected in maybe September, October. So we're patiently waiting for the device. We will, of course, review it and give you our impressions and bring you any news about it once it launches. But it's just kind of in that limbo period. If there's news about it, we'll, of course, talk about it. If we're not talking about something in the show and week, it doesn't mean that we're ignoring it. It doesn't mean we have anything against it. It just means we as you probably are, just waiting for it to release. Should we talk about what we know about Quest Pro so far?
Yeah, so we should recap, I guess, those basically, you know, there's a lot of rumors. There's a lot of misinformation out there. There's people out there trying to garner the top spot on Google via various routes. And there's only so much that they've actually revealed. So, Heaney, why don't you give us that recap?
Yeah, so what Meta has said about Project Cambria Quest Pro is that it will be a high-end product that's sold alongside Quest 2 for a price significantly higher than $800. It is not a replacement for Quest 2. It is a higher-end alternative. It is aimed at remote workers and mixed reality early adopters, but it will run existing Quest content. It looks, as you can see in the image, to have a more balanced design than Quest 2, whereas Quest 2 is very front-heavy. And Meta has confirmed that it uses pancake lenses, which enable the display to have a much narrower gap between the panels and the lenses and enable those panels to be smaller, which is what enables this visually smaller visor at the front. And it looks like the battery will be in the rear based on some of the reports so far, but that's not something that Meta has confirmed. Meta has said it will have much higher resolution cameras with color pass-through and a depth sensor for mixed reality, as well as we talked about before, built-in eye and face tracking sensors to drive avatars. A supply chain analyst, Ming-Chi Kuo, the same one we were talking about revealing the Apple headset specs, say it will have dual 2160 by 2160 mini LED panels, and an import log for Empyrean development kit suggests it will have 12 gigabytes of RAM, up from Quest 2's 6 gigabytes.
And we know it's significantly priced above $800. That's a, you know, the sky is the limit there in pricing. But we've got to compile all these things. We've talked about a lot of different things here, but it's fascinating to think that Carmack has been sort of banging his drum saying we should do what Quest 2 did, but even better, right? A little bit cheaper, a little bit more powerful, a little bit lighter. And that should have been the next device out of Meta from his perspective, I think. But instead, what we've seen is this effort to define a new product category, I think. And that's why there's discussion over whether the Quest name is appropriate to use with a pro level device. Is it going to come across to people that this is not the Quest 3? This is not the device that Carmack was sort of pitching them to do. This is sitting in a different category and kind of meant for a different audience than that initial low end device that's trying to get to the widest audience possible. Whereas we're watching what Pico's doing, and every indication we're hearing there from Pico is that they may have gone and built very close to the device that Carmack was kind of pitching Meta to focus on. And so we've got this situation where Meta is trying to go towards the high end and define this new product category right at the time a new entrant is coming into the, to dethrone them in at least some Western nations. And then we've also got Sony coming up, Apple coming up. And we expected going into this year that this was going to be a defining year in virtual reality. We expected all of these platforms to be out this year, but it's all gotten pushed into next year. And that's even like, people asking us about Lynx R1, right? Even the biggest companies in the world are having to change their timelines because of the situations going on with supply and actually building these devices. But we have every expectation that next year is going to be this is going to be kind of a breakout year, 2023, with all these platforms coming to fruition in a very real way, right?
Yeah, it seems like the next year, the next 12 months is where this industry goes from being essentially entirely dominated by Meta to being a kind of thriving industry that has real viable competition. I think the real open question for me is, if you were with us in the past few shows, you'll have heard us talk about Pico 4. And from what we know about it so far, it's essentially going to be a thinner and lighter Quest 2. The question is, how will that be priced? The Quest 2 has just gone up from $300 to $400. Can Pico deliver a thinner and lighter Quest 2 for the same $400? Or is this going to be something that sits in price between Quest 2 and Quest Pro as a kind of midpoint option? If it is the same price, then I think Carmack's argument about that Meta should have been focusing on just doing Quest 2, but better and thinner and lighter and cheaper, makes a lot of sense. But if it does turn out that to achieve this, Pico is going to have to be priced above it, then that opens up a space for Quest 3 to come in next year and maybe be able to deliver the same kind of experience with perhaps a newer processor at a more reasonable price. But it's going to be fascinating to see the competition here and see what do consumers really decide on.
Well, yeah, I think we're ready to move towards the end of the show. Thank you all for the commenters. We've got some incredible comments out there. And I want to pitch some of the stuff we've got coming up on our channel tomorrow, Backseat VR Developer on Wednesday. From Between Realities, we'll have Alex and Skiva playing Stones of Harlath with developer Cyril Guchard. And then I have a VR tour on Thursday with Kevin Mack of his VR chat world, Numenanki. It was an incredible perspective. We love getting unique and interesting perspectives. And Kevin Mack is this visual effects supervisor from years making films, doing the visual effects in films like Fight Club, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, what are some of the other ones? Did Big Fish with Tim Burton. And then around 2015, he got interested in VR. But that person's perspective is fascinating to me. And I remember meeting him a couple of years ago in Los Angeles and talking with him. And he told me some fascinating things about his perspective on the world. And VR allows him to invite people basically into this imagination he's got. And that world that is going to be in VR chat, I've got a full tour. And then you can obviously after the tour, go and find the world on VRChat and see some of what he's talking about for yourself with other friends.
I think you should just note, though, that is VRChat for PC. As far as I'm aware, that's not available on VRChat for Quest.
I didn't try running it on Quest, but I would have every expectation you should probably be on a PC for that because it's probably not going to run well.
No, and I think VRChat has worlds that are Quest, they're PC only, and worlds that run on both PC and Quest. I'm fairly sure that world is PC only. So if you only have a Quest and you don't have a gaming PC, that's not something you can access.
Yeah, so our PC VR watchers out there, I should have led with that. You're probably going to need a PC, and if you don't have that PC, maybe watch the video for that tour, because that is probably the best experience. But just incredible sound, incredible sights, and he's got a really fascinating perspective. So we'll have that video up on Thursday. The premieres for both Backseat VR Developer and that tour are both already on our channel. And then, of course, come back on Tuesdays, 10 a.m. Pacific, as we dive into the very latest news. We do expect to have a very busy last few months of the year here as we get into everything. So please come back, and thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you in the future.
Thanks, everyone, again. It has been some fascinating comments this week. It's great to be back in our normal studio, and we will see you again next week.